We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello, and you're very welcome to Your Politics Podcast. I'm Paul Cunningham. Joining me this afternoon, RT's political correspondent, Micheál Lehane. Hello, Micheál.
Hello, Paul.
You were away last week on a secret mission, part of saving journalism. And are you able to tell us anything about this?
No.
3 weeks in a row now?
No, it won't be long more now, I'd say.
Yeah.
All going to plan.
The tension.
Yeah.
Tension is absolutely shocking.
Fever pitch.
Shortly, we're going to be joined by Sandra Hurley of our political unit. But our political guest today is the Fianna Fáil deputy for Dublin North West, Paul McAuliffe. Paul, thanks for joining us on Your Politics Podcast.
Hi, guys. It's great to be on. It's great to have the excuse to come out of your office upstairs, which I spent much of the last year on Zoom on, to come downstairs to chat to yourselves. So it's, I'm delighted.
I mean, just for a listener's point of view, it is a little bit difficult because while Micheál and I are sort of socially distant in the same studio, poor old Paul McAuliffe is across the way in a room all on his own. So he's on his lonesome this afternoon.
I think a lot of people, Paul, have been in the same boat for the last year.
Exactly, nothing new. Let's get down to the really tough questions. I'm looking at the Fianna Fáil website, and it gives pictures and images of their TDs and senators. And I'm looking at a picture of Paul McAuliffe, and he's got chestnut hair, lots of white teeth. And I'm beginning to think this could be the photograph that was taken for your council campaign in 2009.
I don't know. I haven't looked at the Fianna Fáil website in some time, Paul. But yeah, it's certainly been a while since we started on the trail.
It's been a journey, as they say.
Yeah,
grand.
And a strange introductory year as well, Paul. I think for a lot of new TDs coming on, it was a big transition. I've just come off a great call in Ballymun with all the local council officials, and it would make you nostalgic for how hands-on the local authority system actually is compared to sometimes how hands-off the Dáil and the Seanad are here in Leinster House.
Do you feel isolated? I mean, you are here in this sort of venerable institution, but basically you're on your tod because no one's meeting anymore. Even the great parliamentary party meetings in the big room and the shouting and all the rest of it, you're now just doing it from your office.
Yeah, I actually think I heard Áine Lawler say that she was struggling to put faces on all of the names of the different TDs. And I think that's the same for all of us. We're trying to find out who the new players are, who the new people are within our own PPs. But also, you really miss the opportunity to get out and listen to people on the ground. Like clinics, I always joke that if I didn't get elected to the Dáil, I would have been a very good researcher for Liveline, because when you're at a clinic, you can nearly predict what the issues are going to be the following week politically, because they're coming to you first. And
yeah.
I think a lot of TDs miss that interaction, and I'm hoping when retail opens up that's when we're going to be able to start getting back to our clinics.
Exactly, and that's due to happen next Monday. But
yeah,
if people were talking to you, where would housing fit in that general discussion? Would it be top of the agenda?
It's first, second, third and last. It's all of them. Look, the big challenge for Fianna Fáil is if we don't get the housing right, then us having participated in this government will have been a waste for us, and it will not have delivered for people. I think that's how important the housing issue is.
It's a high bar, Paul.
It has to be a high bar, though, because I know the big lie in politics is that Fianna Fáil was in government for the last 10 years. It's funny listening to Alan Kelly today, like some of the issues around vulture funds and so on, there were Labour Party TDs that joined Fine Gael that went through those lobbies. But I think if you went out and asked the public, their perception would be that Fianna Fáil was in government for more of the last 10 years than Labour. And I think that's interesting. That obviously came out of the dynamic after the general election. So I think a lot has changed in the last year. And the only way that Fianna Fáil can prove that being part of the coalition that we now have was worth it, and it did take sacrifices. It took a lot of difficulty from our own members to vote for the programme for government, particularly going in with Fine Gael. The only way to prove that was the right decision is to deliver.
Can you tell us in the past 10 months what you have delivered in housing, because you hold the housing brief?
Yeah, we do. And I'm vice chair of the House and the Rockness Committee. So I've seen quite a lot of the stuff coming through. I think justice was probably the big power engine of the last Dáil in terms of the legislation that came through it. I think the amount of legislation coming through the Oireachtas Housing Committee will be the engine of this Dáil. The two big pieces are the Land Development Agency Bill and the Affordable Housing Bill. And the challenge for Fianna Fáil is that both of those are long-term strategic changes in how we deliver housing. They insert the state back into the centre ground of housing delivery. And the challenge for us will be, is that long-term strategic policy, will that deliver over the short-term politics that we all live in?
Well, one thing that was very short-term, and this was according to Jed Nash, Labour Party's finance spokesperson, he said, when it comes to those international investors, we sometimes call them cuckoo funds, and preventing them from moving into housing estates and snapping everything up, you could move very quickly. You could do something on the question of stamp duty and arrest it almost immediately. And yet we heard from Leo Varadkar today that it's going to be next Tuesday before the government finally gets around to tackling this issue.
Yeah, well, this is Jed Nash, of course, who supported Michael Noonan's budget that introduced and invited those institutional investors into the state. So I suppose...
Different time, though, wouldn't you say?
It was a different time. But isn't it interesting that a policy made nearly 10 years ago is having impacts now, 10 years later? And that's why I think the two affordable housing bills, the affordable housing bill and the LDA bill, that's why these are so important, because they're going to change how we deliver policy going forward. And there's been so much, it's been very frustrating for me, is that there's been so much debate about the shared equity scheme, which is a tiny part of the bill. But actually, the big parts of the bill are about us getting back into the space of building below cost housing for people to purchase on council land. That's pretty groundbreaking. Like long-term rental for people above the 40,000 income cap. So effectively, all the security of council housing for those people who don't qualify with the cost rental scheme. And then increasing the obligation on developers from 10% to 20%. But you're right, the institutional investors have to be nailed down. That has to be done with taxation and planning changes. And I was delighted to see that clarified today, that there'll be proposals coming to the Cabinet on Tuesday.
Well, why not,
Paul, when you look at the numbers mentioned in relation to the building of homes on the council lands, and particularly affordable homes, a figure of around 6,000 over the next 3 or 4 years was mentioned by Dara O'Brien 2 weeks back, which is many, many homes. But when you look in the context of people trying to get a home, it mightn't seem a huge figure if you're looking over a 3 to 4 year period.
No, definitely not enough, Micheál. And I think the two elements to that is, Onó Brin has criticised us many times for the budget allocated for both cost rental and affordable this year. But of course, we haven't actually passed the legislation yet. So it'd be crazy to apply a budget to something that hasn't yet been put into a legislative basis. But I think the real announcements on those figures that you talk about, the 6,000 related to existing resources, but the real announcement on that will come with the review of the National Development Plan and the launch of the Housing for All in the summer. And that will be the real ambition, and that will show to people. And look, there's a job for us in Fianna Fáil to make sure that Michael McGrath and Dara O'Brien deliver in that announcement. And we're putting the pressure on internally that many are putting on externally to make sure that we deliver. Because, as I said, it's important not just for us, it's important for people looking for housing.
One other question just on the issue of housing, unless Micheál wants to butt in again. On the Land Development Agency, this central concern that Sinn Féin and other parties further on the left have, which is that if you're going to build public housing on public land, it should be done on a controlled basis. If you allow in the private sector, if you allow in the private developers, you're just going to repeat what happened before. We're going to have a boom-bust cycle and everyone's going to lose.
Yeah, and look, I think a little bit like the Affordable Housing Bill, where the opposition, who largely agree with big, big chunks of the bill, and they focus on the areas where they're concerned, inevitably the opposition will do the same with the LDA bill. I think overall the LDA will be about the state being back involved in the provision of housing. And there are people on the left who are fearful that we're going to rely on the same type of model that I suppose myself and other councillors on Dublin City Council had to compromise on when we passed O'Devney Gardens. I think the two bills mean a game change in how the LDA will operate. So I don't think members of the public, and certainly within Fianna Fáil, we don't mind who builds the cost rental, because you need builders in the end of the day to build houses. What we need to make sure is that the regulations in which they operate it ensure that there's value for money and that it's it's not for-profit housing that's being sold on those sites. So whether the cost rental, for example, a lot of people talk about the cost rental and whether we should have AHBs, approved housing bodies, or whether we have market operators. In Vienna, in Berlin, it's actually it's those outside the state sector that assist in providing that supply. They're called sub-market operators. Their costs are limited, as would be the cost in the affordable housing bill. And so I think there's a great fear out there that there's a reliance here on the market. And my view is that once we're providing the product at good value and we're doing it in a way that provides builds in affordability, then that's the way we have to proceed. That's the way we have to proceed, yeah.
Paul, there is a sense from you that perhaps the statements so far from government haven't been ambitious enough and perhaps need to be more ambitious, and that the importance of housing and the scale of it for Fianna Fáil, I haven't heard the senior ranks say that going into government would be a failure if the Fianna Fáil don't deliver absolutely on housing.
Well, whether they said it or not, I think everyone in the party knows, like, if we don't solve housing, that's the centre ground of everything. I think it's the centre ground of everything. I wouldn't say that I'm frustrated with senior colleagues. I just think it's the process. Like, you spend 10 months in committee dealing with legislation that's going to now come before the Shannon next week and the Dáil subsequent to that. That work has to be done to put in place legislation. We haven't had an affordable housing scheme in 10 years. We've never had a cost rental scheme. So you have to do that work. You have to have pre-legislative scrutiny. You have to have experts coming in, agreeing and disagreeing with government policy. If you don't do that, you don't have the legislative basis. And that's why councils haven't done either of these schemes for the last number of years. So it's frustrating because all of the work has gone into the legislation and that doesn't build one house. And yet, once we apply the money and the targets, it will very significantly deliver housing. So, yeah, that's the frustration. And also frustrating the way the affordable housing bill was covered in the media.
Ooh.
Now, I'm not saying that.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not saying that's an editorial decision of the media. Often what happens is the opposition focus on the area that they're concerned about, which is the shared equity scheme. And then the whole debate becomes about shared equity. Whereas I really think the idea of cost rental and affordable housing purchase, like, they're groundbreaking. They really are really, really, really significant. And
but the opposition agrees with you on the question of cost rental. They say it's a good idea. They want to see more of it. So there isn't any issue there. The only thing they're criticising you over is the level of ambition.
And that's my frustration, Paul, is that in all of the errors of covering those bills, we spend 10 seconds saying we agree with 85% of it, and we spend a lot of time disagreeing with a very small element of it. And that's just the nature of politics. I'm not, for a new 2D coming in, it's interesting to see that on areas of consensus, areas that are going to have very significant impacts, there's no debate, there's no coverage of that. And yet there's significant coverage on something that's only actually going to impact 1% of the overall housing mortgage market next year, the shared equity scheme.
And have you any worries at all about the shared equity scheme and the analysis of it that shows, despite presentations by Darragh O'Brien to the contrary, that it could lead to price increases?
Yeah, well, look, everything that we've heard at the committee from the ESRI, from the Central Bank, from lessons in the UK, is that the shared equity scheme works when it's time limited, when it doesn't have a huge impact in the market, and it's limited in size, and it doesn't drift into the second hand market. So, of course, I've concerns because you're looking down the line and saying, I hope at some point the supply does come on board, and that our reliance on an affordability measure like this is wound down. That's what has to happen over time. Even the minister said that. So we need the supply to come on board. And in the meantime, we've this short-term scheme. I think the regional caps are important, although there's another frustration. Like, I've heard really senior people, including Deputy Holly Cairns last night, saying that the government believe 450,000 is affordable. When actually, the shared equity scheme assists people purchasing homes for 450,000 because we don't believe 450,000 is affordable. So I think there's a lot of debate around that. Of course, there's concerns, but it will mean it's a short-term intervention while the longer-term supply comes on stream.
But if you don't believe it's affordable, why is that 450,000 a document that's floating around the Minister for Housing's department?
Yes, yeah, so that's. But again, it's about how that scheme was discussed. So we believe 450,000 isn't affordable. So then people purchasing that, we need to make that more affordable for those people. Okay, it's existing supply. There's nothing we can do at this stage because we're waiting on the longer term supply. So we included that price in a scheme to make it more affordable. If we had had the cap at 200,000, which would have been a headline figure that would have been better than 450, then everybody between 200 and 450 would have had no support, and we wouldn't have made any of those homes between 200 and 450 more affordable.
But why not skin the cat a different way, which is to build on public houses on public land, and there you're not obliged to follow the market-based pricing?
Yeah, absolutely. And isn't that what we're doing? Isn't that what's in the Affordable Housing Bill that we've given no attention to, which is the council-led affordable housing on council land? And that's in the bill.
Okay, I tell you what, let's move on from housing and move on to the fortunes of the soldiers of destiny. How are you doing 10 months into government snuggling up tightly to Fine Gael, the United Ireland Party?
I tell you, there were certainly early days on committees when it felt uncomfortable going in with your Fine Gael colleagues.
Did it really? I mean, like, you're a long-term councillor, so you would know about, you know, coming together for particular plans or particular deals. Yeah, no, what was different about this?
No, the difference was we were talking about national policies around housing, and I would have felt Fine Gael made, you know, very clear mistakes on housing over the last number of years. And so it was interesting to see us working on the housing committee together on some of these bills. Like, my assessment was that Fine Gael were dragged kicking and screaming to the state being involved in housing, certainly in terms of affordable purchase and cost rental. They might say that they were preparing it, but it was very late in the day. And so it was interesting. That was an interesting dynamic in the beginning. But I have to say, we've kind of rolled up our sleeves. We've got on with it. I think certainly the Fine Gael colleagues and the Green Party colleagues on the Housing Committee, we've worked really, really well together. And we've been able to deal with some of the concerns and at the same token, sort of swat away some of the misinformation that seems to be coming from opposition.
Can I suggest to you that maybe if, as you said, you felt that Fine Gael was dragged kicking and screaming to that position, maybe if Micheál Martin hadn't been so adamant on the issue that, you know, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin might have been a better fit?
Except I don't believe Sinn Féin's approach to politics would have provided any sort of stable government, Paul. And that's a hard thing for me to say. It's not based on the North. It's not based on their history. It's about how I've seen them operate over the last 10 months here in the chamber. I think at times they're willing to push their movements and their political arguments even ahead of the truth. And very hard to have a relationship with
that's
a party.
That's quite a charge now. I mean, there's always give and take and cut and thrust in politics.
Well, it is a charge. And I learned it very early on in the debate on the mother and baby home bill. You know, there was a very clear accusation made by Mary Lou MacDonald. She said, tonight, government TDs vote to seal the records of mother and baby homes.
Have you memorised that or brought it down with you there?
Well, it's sort of stuck in your head because when you're getting phone calls from people who are, you know, good friends of yours, maybe have been impacted by that, and they say, Paul, why would a TD in 2020 vote to seal records of something that happened all those years ago? And of course, the answer was we didn't vote to seal those records. If anyone read the bill, you would know we were protecting the database, not in any way sealing any records. But it was true to say that bill didn't yet provide the access to tracing information, which we promised would happen. That did happen last week.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I looked at Roderick O'Gorman's tweet. I think he got 86 likes for the tweet in which he announced that legislation. And yet, that weekend on social media, there was a whirlwind of people suggesting that we were covering up or attempting to cover up.
But can I put it to you, basically the reason why that went so badly wrong was that the minister, Roderick O'Gorman, didn't do a particularly good job in the Shannon and then bombed in the Dáil, and it caused consternation within your own ranks, which led you to sort of try and get your message out. This was the government failing to deliver on communications.
I think you're right. I think that it was very early days, and there's no doubt about that. But it's very hard to counteract a complete falsehood by a leader of the opposition. And I don't know how you get around that. It's a very different type of politics than I have even seen early on in my term in the council. When a leader of the opposition, and I go back to that phrase to say that government TDs voted to seal the records, like that just isn't true under any objective term. And yet, of course, all of her supporters believe that, because why would a politician tell such a blatant falsehood? And I think that's an interesting dynamic. And so I relate back to the question that you said to me, why would Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin not work together? I just think there would be basic trust issues in how they approach politics and how we do.
What about Fianna Fáil itself? How are you working? Because it's pretty clear that there is a rump within the parliamentary party who is concerned that Micheál Martin, rather than leading them to the mountain, is leading them to disaster.
I know, I would disagree with that. I go back to the point I made on housing. Whatever you think about whether we should or shouldn't have gone into government, whether we should have went in with Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, Sinn Féin or Fine Gael.
You'd like to win with Fianna Fáil. Those days are gone, Paul.
I think those days are long gone, Micheál. But no matter what happened over those few months, if we don't deliver once we get into government, then there's no point. So the practical approach I've taken to being a backbench TD has been just to start ticking off the things I can. And I suppose the scrambler bike legislation was a big sort of personal victory for me, because I was talking about it for such a long period of time. It was such a simple thing. It was a legal change. It wasn't a resource issue. And fair play, did a bit of work with James Brown and I have to say Hildegard Knocken and Eamon Ryan. And that issue now will be dealt with in legislation. Yeah. And I think if we get back to that and start ticking off the delivery, when I knock on the door in 4 or 5 years' time, they'll forget about what Danny McConnell text, what happened at the PP meeting or not. It'll be about whether we changed our lives or not.
It's Daniel McConnell now.
Sorry.
Now. It's getting very intimate there now.
Sorry.
One quick question before you go. Just you were mentioning there about effectively the life of a backbench TD. I mean, there you are sitting at home in Dublin Northwest and you're watching Roisin Shortall on the telly box every 3 days or so, and your only job is basically to walk through and vote the right way as you're told to by the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste. How difficult is that?
Well, what was really, it was a real wake-up call for me was, you might remember very early on, there was a debate around the opposition felt we were limiting their time because we were given government backbench TDs the opportunity to participate in the debate at the middle of the debate rather than the end. And I can't remember the percentage, but the vast majority of speaking time in the Dáil is taken up by opposition TDs, despite them being in a minority.
I think wasn't it the issue of timing? They felt
it
like,
was.
Say, for like people before profit, if they were appearing 2/3 into the debate, then people would have lost attention and their ability to communicate would have been lost.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
so,
the issue.
So can you imagine the frustration of a backbench TD if the opposition are admitting that people's attention are gone? Can you imagine the frustration of a backbench TD? So, yeah, speaking time can be very difficult to get. Not because you're toeing the government line, but just because there isn't as much opportunities to speak. I look at people like Danny Healy-Ray, Michael Healy-Ray, Michael Collins. They might be up 10 or 15 times in a day. Between leaders' questions, questions on promised legislation, the Dáil debates, priority questions for parties. So that's frustrating. But I think we have a different opportunity in government, and that's that we have access to government ministers, often in private, but we've that opportunity then to try and get things progressed in the background. Not as good for the theatre of politics, but I go back to the idea of this being a long-term business. And if we just deliver, it works. Imagine politicians wanting to actually do what they were elected to do.
Who knew, Paul McAuliffe? Who knew?
Just before you go, Paul, you mentioned at the start that it was difficult to get to know the players. I don't know in what context you meant the word players there, but if you were to pick three players looking across the Dáil in this present Dáil, who would you pick?
Am I excluded from picking someone in?
No, you're not. No.
Interesting. Obviously, a lot of attention was on cabinet at the beginning. I think Michael McGrath has done, a very strong job in in the background, there hasn't been a lot of tension in that space, but I think the National Development Plan will be a moment when a lot of that work comes out. So I think Michael has done a very good job. I think Dara has been combative, but I think that's needed within the sort of hectic debate that is housing.
Is that Dara O'Brien we're talking about here?
Dara
Cleary now.
Don't
say Jim O'Callaghan now is the third one and we'll all be confused.
No. Yeah, well, actually, I wasn't deliberately doing that. I sit in the last two rows of the convention centre. I'm the definition of a backbencher when you've got thousands of seats in front of you, but I've Dara Cleary to one side of me and Barry Cowan to the other, so I'm nearly in the former minister's row. So, but look, let's be.
Give me the third player.
Let me give you two from across the chamber. I'm not going to pick someone in the Greens because I look like I'm just picking too many. But I think Alan Kelly has done a job of trying to mark himself out as being, you know, in that centre ground between Sinn Féin and the government. I like Alan's style. I think he's very direct. And I think he's doing a good job at needling Sinn Féin and being. It's interesting watching the Taoiseach and Alan Kelly. Sometimes they're complimenting each other and sometimes they're at each other's throats. And that'll be,
we'll be hearing a bit of that in a few minutes, but last one now.
One more. I should really pick somebody in Sinn Féin, shouldn't I? It's hard to serve so much time with Eoin O'Brien and not say that he knows a huge amount about the subject.
Okay,
and I think that's fair. I think it can be incredibly cynical sometimes, but maybe I'm saying that with the government lens on. But I think, you know, in fairness to him, he knows his brief.
With a compliment like that, we'll draw it to a close. Fianna Fáil's Paul McAuliffe, thank you very much for joining us on Your Politics Podcast. Thanks, Mel. Micheál Holohan, housing. We finally learned that after 5 days of leaders' questions and this issue of investment funds, it's going to reach finality and it's coming next week. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's coming next week under severe pressure of the government, who I think at certain points in this week thought they might have had a little bit more time, some within the coalition thinking they needed a bit more time to get this one absolutely right because they have a fear that the investment funds still have a big place in the market, and if movement was to happen in a certain way, that could be jeopardised. But it does look like you'll get a clear enough proposal. Its implementation will take a little bit longer. It'll come in three parts. One will be a regulation out of the housing side, something on planning that will put a limit on the number of homes that these investments can buy. The second part of it will look to local authorities to make sure that they don't end up renting any homes that are purchased by these investment funds. The third piece then is on taxation. It's looking like stamp duty would be hiked for those companies compared to first-time buyers, because at the moment that rate is the same.
Okay, just on housing, before we leave it as a topic, we have a couple of clips because there was a little interesting exchange, let's put it that way, between the leader of the Labour Party, Alan Kelly, and also the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. And this once again came down to their records of what they did years ago on this particular issue. We're going to kick off first with the Labour leader, Alan Kelly, who decided to give Micheál Martin something of a kick.
I'd like to remind the Taoiseach that the reason that Michael Noonan did bring in the REITs back in 2011 or 12 was because you and your colleagues damn well destroyed this country with your housing policies in bed with developers. So don't come in here and start throwing out commentary like that without reflecting on the fact that you hadn't the guts and it took you to the very end to stand up to your own party, only when you knew everyone else had fell. You've some cheek to come in here and talk like that without reflecting on your own history and what you sat beside and who you sat beside as decisions were made to destroy this country for generations.
Thank you, Dave.
And that was Alan Kelly. And Micheál Martin decided to return in kind.
Deputy Kelly did raise issues. I do think there has to be a focus on young people. But Deputy Kelly, you were a member of the government at the time that welcomed in the investment funds. You did. But you did welcome it. And I understand that. I accept it was different times.
Welcoming it, I was junior minister at the time.
You said that in order to stimulate the housing supply, that Minister Deputy Noonan is implementing a number of key policy initiatives, such as the introduction of the Real Estate Investment Trust, REIT, tax regime, encouraging large-scale investment into commercial
residential.
Which you said is vital. You said at the time, you said it was vital. Yeah, but
and because of you,
I will take
because
the
of your
point,
government,
no,
because of your cabinet,
that the context of the time
because of your cabinet,
was investment was required to get supply going.
Because
just
of your
making
decisions,
the point.
A cabinet for a decade.
Now, in relation to young people, young people have suffered the most as a result of COVID, in my view.
There you go. We're joined here by Sandra Hurley, who was listening into that. It was getting rather pointed this week. There was clearly a bit of heat in it, and you just get the sense that this isn't going to go away, even if they do deal with the investment funds.
Yes, I think that's the problem for the government. I mean, you can see with Sinn Féin, they've gone on the attack on the housing issue three times this week at leaders' questions, and they know they have the government on the ropes. And I think there's two particular dimensions to it, and actually it's encapsulated in those clips. One of them is the problem for Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, that they've either been in government over the last 10 years or else hold some responsibility in terms of the crash. The second point is in relation to the ESRI research this week that found that young people have been worst hit by the pandemic, and that also there's going to be a generation worse off than their parents. And Piers Doherty referred to that today at Leaders' Questions and, you know, really pointed to the government saying it was an indictment of them. And I think this is just really difficult territory for the government because the youth vote is so important. They know that they have ceded enormous ground here to Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin has been hoovering up voters in the 18 to 34 age groups, but it's expanding as well. And it's been dominating now. It's getting well into the 40s in terms of getting the most voters of that age group. And it's a massive issue for the other political parties because they know they are losing all that youth vote. And I think when Micheál there spoke of the changes that do look like they're certainly going to be announced next week, some of them might come in quickly, perhaps the stamp duty. But the problem in relation to housing is very wide and it's not going to go away.
If we switch topic, Micheál, and bring you back in on the vaccines, there was something floated by the Taoiseach, the Leo Varadkar, in relation to targets. We did have a target, which is 82%.
Still the target.
Is it?
It's still the target.
Let's go there. 82% of people either getting their first dose or an invitation to go to their first dose by the end of June. But then there seemed to be, could possibly be exceeded, said Mr. Varadkar.
Well, yeah, 82% by the end of June to have either been got two doses or received one dose, isn't it?
No, one dose or got an invitation to one dose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to be the latest iteration, to use one of those terrible words.
Sandra used that 2 months ago.
But did she?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all about iterations and coalescing around policies and all that. So
what's the other new word we were talking about? Actress. Actress is the news that being used a lot.
We're getting ahead of ourselves now.
Yeah, that's another slot later on. Yeah, it seems to be that by July, everyone who wanted a vaccine would get one, but they would have the appointment perhaps before the end of June. But there was all words like the possibility of and the like. So you could potentially be beyond the 82%, or at least everyone who wanted one would have that appointment in place by the end of June. So going into July and early July, they'd have the vaccine.
Okay. And Sandra, once again, you've been tracking this issue. We've got next Monday the reopening of retail, but it'll probably be the end of the month before we can gauge what the impact of that opening actually has on COVID numbers.
Yes, we're always told that there's sort of a 2 week lag in terms of the COVID numbers and it coming through. So the government is going to be watching those case numbers. However, I think they are very much aware that they are going to rise. We are going to see numbers going up. There's also a lot more testing going on. So for the government, it is going to have to hold its nerve, I think, for the next stage of the reopening in June when it sees those numbers go up, because we're getting a lot of hints now. There's a lot of optimism around, partly due to the vaccination programme, that things are going to perhaps accelerate somewhat. And there has been discussion now about travel. We're told that Eamon Ryan is going to bring a memo to Cabinet next week and that this is going to look at opening up international travel perhaps sooner than people would have thought. And firstly, it's going to look at bringing Ireland into that digital green certificate system. Also, then it's going to review the mandatory hotel quarantine. That's due to expire towards the end of June. We're being told there's some sort of a revision planned, so it's not clear yet whether they might get rid of it. It was supposed to be a short-term measure or whether it's going to be scaled down. And They're also looking at what countries people might be able to travel to if they're fully vaccinated, suggestions perhaps that people could travel to the UK. So there is a feeling that things are accelerating and that that people are feeling a lot better about moving forward.
When it comes to the vaccination, Micheál, we still have two big groups because the Janssen single jab isn't really here and is only being used for certain vulnerable people.
Yes.
But you've got that issue of the AstraZeneca where you get your first shot and then you could have a 12 to 16 delay before you get the second shot and you're not fully vaccinated until then, and it only comes as workable sort of a few weeks after that. But if you happen to get the Pfizer, then suddenly you're going to be fully vaccinated within 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, but it's only relevant really in the context of foreign travel, isn't
exactly.
it? And that's where it arises, and that is causing some concern politically. The view, and it's only a political view, is that perhaps if there are a lot of AstraZeneca vaccines around in July and the like, that there's a possibility that that gap could be narrowed somewhat. And also on the other vaccine, Janssen, the HSE advice to NIAC, or what they're hoping for, it seems at this point, is that it would be available for people aged 35 and up. So if that were to happen in the coming days, an expectation that that advice will be received definitely before next Tuesday, that would change things and accelerate the vaccination programme.
Sandra Hurley, housing and vaccines, it's really been sort of the two big topics this week. Was there anything else that caught your eye?
Well, the Untashka row, which has been rumbling on, I suppose, since the weekend. And it's kind of a strange one. I think on the one hand, it seems to be deepening, given that on all sides, everybody's positions are very entrenched. They seem to be fairly sincerely held. Everybody's doubled down. The Taoiseach has doubled down on his right to comment on planning. The Green Party TDs are holding steady. And then you've got the local TDs weighing in as well. And even Untashka maintains its position. But to some extent, I think it looks like a little bit of a surface row, because all these positions are very predictable. I think individuals are playing to their own constituencies somewhat. And perhaps there's a realisation amongst everyone that this is just going to be settled by the courts. There have been some serious charges made, though. I suppose Nasa Harrigan saying today that there was political interference and that it was shameless. So some strong language. But I think perhaps in the coalition there will just be an acceptance that they have to move on from this.
Yeah, I mean, Pascal Donoghue was on today with Claire Byrne this morning, Micheál, and saying the same thing, that there's big rows. This isn't one of them.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, there's obviously the rows and there's the whole question about a non-governmental organisation that has a role particularly for this and for environmental reasons. And the Taoiseach's intervention at that level is surprising. But what surprised me at another level was the level of giddiness that it sparked within Fine Gael, and a sense of excitement about what the Taoiseach
Thrilled.
Has said. Thrilled. And it was the first time you could see a real warm embrace towards Micheál Martin. They never felt quite as enthusiastic about him up until that particular point. And there was a sense of shock and looking into their souls about this, how this had happened. That was definitely a feeling, particularly among many of the rural TDs.
Given we're getting giddy ourselves, maybe we'll bring in terrible words.
Speaking of that, before we go, Paul Reid has given a football analogy, and things are becoming a little bit more relaxed, notwithstanding still the seriousness of the situation. And when he's talking about where things are at, he says, we're 2-0 up at half-time, but he has seen many a lead lost at half-time. And of course, he is a Bulls and a Leeds United fan. And he said the vaccine team are the forward line, essentially knocking in the goals.
You've already lost me.
And he keeps going, and the back line is the public, and we got to keep our defence strong.
You what?
And our own George Lee was there at that briefing and asked Paul Reid the pertinent question. He never included a goalkeeper in that fairly detailed analogy.
Thanks for that, Micheál.
thanks to George, too, for asking that question.
Yeah.
Not really, no, Paul. It's clear enough. 2-0 up at halftime. It could all go wrong still.
Yeah, true. A minister...
It could be 4-0 up by the end.
Before the end of this podcast.
Everyone vaccinated by the middle of June.
Enough. A minister said, text me, that his political assistant was going to reach out to me.
Reach out?
Reach out.
Are you an actor in all
it
of this?
It sounded like one of those songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actor is your one
this
week?
I heard a new one last week. If you remember last year, we'd heard a huge amount about the new normal, and that became quite tedious and may have been banned in certain media organisations. I think the Taoiseach floated a new concept of relative normality. So get ready for that. We're not going back to the way it was, but relatively speaking, things are better than they used to be.
Right. Micheál, what do you think? What does that mean?
Yeah, it's interesting. I suppose what I thought was interesting for the Taoiseach today was that question, that ongoing question around indoor dining. And he said, we're aiming for indoor dining, his words, in July, but a lot can happen between now and then, and saying that the disparity between hotels and restaurants will only last a few weeks. Is there a hint there or a possibility that you could see indoor dining before July? It sounds that way.
Possible is the key word here.
Possible.
You possibly could do this, you possibly could do that, or it possibly may not happen at all.
And more local matters in all Irish politics, or a lot of it is local. The Taoiseach not quite as good on his geography of Limerick today, thinking that the racecourse in Limerick, which is going to become the vaccination centre for the city and surrounding area, would be more accessible than the Radisson Hotel, which is out the Innes Road, which left some Limerick TDs bewildered, given that the racecourse would be further away and wouldn't have the level of accessibility.
Whoops.
Reminds me of some, there was a story once, wasn't there, of some
Fadhau,
of some Taoiseach making his way down to the down to Orisanuachtarán, going down the quays and looking at the bars and saying, I haven't been inside in a bar for 10 years and the like, and someone then knew the election was doomed. But not quite that, not saying that now, but this thing of knowing Ireland.
I'm not going to ask you to name names in case we get into trouble here. One last thing, Micheál, and we've got a bone to pick with Sandra Hurley. You might know this, but Miss Hurley appeared on another podcast recently.
Yes.
Called Your Best Self.
I defected. Sorry about
defected,
that.
Defected, yeah. Now, I'm just saying, so it was 32 minutes. I've just got my calculator here, 32. And that's some, multiplied by 60 seconds, okay? And then you've got 3 words a second. So if you multiply that total, so that's, she said, in and around 5,760 words in that podcast. But did she mention Micheál Lehane? No. Did she mention Paul Cunningham? No. None of us. 4 words out of 5,760. What have you got to say, Sandra?
Wow. Yeah. I didn't realise there was some sort of data analysis being carried out onto my contributions. Yeah, I'll have to bear that in mind for the future. So,
she's going to do another.
Mention my colleagues at all times.
She's going to do another one. See if for the future. She's got plans for other podcasts.
Yeah,
anyway.
I'm all about, you know, trying all the podcasts.
Exactly. Why not? That's enough rubbish for us tonight. Thank you very much for listening. Your Politics Podcast from RTE News. I'd like to thank RTE's political correspondent, Micheál Lehane, RTE's political reporter, Sandra Hurley, and also our political guest, Fianna Fáil's Paul McAuliffe. Thanks very much for listening. Please do leave a comment. More importantly, please do subscribe to the podcast. We'll see you next week.